Welcome. I'm Victoria Schneps, publisher of Schneps Media. And today have I got an A-lister team to talk to. I am so proud to be able to introduce you, my beloved listeners, to two extraordinary men on an extraordinary mission. First, I've already dubbed the James Bond of Israel, because he has the position right now as a fellow for the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. Very important thing today where democracy is being challenged. But he has his other life as a former national advisor for the State of Israel. So he has lived the life of James Bond, doing the things that we saw on TV and our movie we do in the theaters, but it's the real thing. So welcome, Dr. Eyal Haluta. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Vicky. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. And then with him is another extraordinary man who is Egal Zinstein. And his role is as the president and founder of this wonderful now American Friends of the Israel Intelligence Heritage and Commemoration Center in Israel, looking for friends in America. So welcome, Egal.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on your podcast. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. You know, with all due respect, the world is smiling again with the four hostages that were released and Israel's intelligence really made it happen. So, Eyal, can you tell us a little bit about how does the world of intelligence work and the role you've played over the years and how this, I mean, it was almost like a miracle that they found these four people hidden away amongst the people in an apartment house. They put these poor hostages and the people in Palestine in danger just by having the hostages amongst them in their own building. Remarkable.
Yeah, Vicky, thank you for having us here, and I'm happy to share. I spent more than two decades in the Israel intelligence establishment in Mossad before I became a national security advisor. And all of these topics that you've talked about, of course, are current. They're happening in the last 8 months or so since the war in Gaza started, but they're all part of processes that started before that. And the capacity and the capabilities of the intelligence organizations is crucial. I have to say that, you know, when we talk about October 7 and the war that started, it started with a failure of intelligence. The Israeli organizations failed to understand what Hamas was planning, and they run a deception operation and succeeded to surprise us in ways that we weren't surprised in the conception of our country. But I think ever since that, the IDF and the intelligence organizations have been doing a remarkable job and learning very, very fast, specifically on the release of the hostages. As you say, last Friday, four live hostages were released. They were actually kept in two apartments. There was a young lady called Noa Argamani, who has become a symbol, one of the symbols of this war, because her pictures from being abducted, I think, spread all over the world. She was held in one apartment, and three other guys were held in a different apartment, guarded by Hamas terrorists in the middle of the Nusayrat refugee camp, a very dense area. And as you said, the intelligence needed to know exactly where they were, who guarded them, how to get in, how to get out, so we can complete all this operation while they're alive and without endangering them and the forces who took them. And that was carried out quite remarkably in midday, in the middle of the Nusayrat refugee camp. Unfortunately, one of the strike team leaders, Arnon Zmora, was killed in that operation during this assault. And as a result of the tense fire that started on our forces right immediately after they started their evacuation from hundreds of Hamas terrorists all over Nusayrat, a very dense fighting and combat started until they were able to leave the area. And eventually a helicopter landed and took them all back home to safety. That's a very important day. I think altogether about seven live hostages were released by the IDF since the beginning of the war. And there are about 120 hostages still kept in Gaza. Not all of them were alive, of course. And the negotiation to release them all is very important. It's becoming very tense. Also in Israel, I think it's very important we bring them all home at the earliest possible opportunity.
Well, I think everybody, you know, I'll speak for myself. My heart aches for these families. You know, I'm a mother of four children, and to think how to lose one of them like this is beyond imagination. The terror in your heart, and then now the joy in their hearts is a beautiful thing we'd like for everyone. Let me ask you this. I think that this is a question everybody in America thinks that the defense the Hamas had against them was the best in the world, that your security was known, your forces were known as the most brilliant in the world. In fact, you probably were tapped by other nations to help them invent that where they needed help in their own security problems. From your estimation, what happened that there was such a lag in the intelligence before October 7th?
I think that's a very good question, and I know it's very hard to understand that because, as you say, the Israeli establishment have a wonderful reputation, I think rightly so. And we encounter the very difficult conditions with our enemies, all looking to find opportunities to surprise us. I think what happened with Hamas is that for years there was this fundamental sense in the establishment, also in the political echelon, that there is a limit to what they can do to us. I think that the best term to use on this is actually hubris. There was a sense that Hamas just cannot do those kind of things that the intelligence people thought that they were planning or understood that they were planning and did not take them seriously enough. That's a very huge mistake when you don't take your enemy seriously enough. And they took advantage of it. The second thing that happened is that Israel, throughout 2023, was in a very difficult internal situation, right? We have a new government, the most right-wing government we had in the history of the country. We experienced polarization. There were a lot of rifts in our society from within and attempts to change the judicial system and other things that created a lot of tensions between the society, between the political leaders and the establishment, and the system wasn't working well. And fortunately, our enemies saw that and took that as an advantage. Back in February, myself and other national security advisors, about 15 of us altogether for a span of more than 20 years, have sent a letter to Prime Minister Netanyahu, urging him to pay attention, that those tension and frictions that are imposed during his time within Israel is going to be dangerous from a national security standpoint, because our enemies are looking, and they're all looking for opportunities to find us, because they perceived us as weak and they perceived us as preoccupied with internal things, which we were. I think the combination of that is like a perfect storm. The military wasn't ready, not only on the intelligence, also on the defenses. They didn't take the enemy seriously enough. Our ability to get proper command all the way from the top, from the prime minister, wasn't ready. The right questions weren't asked. The right procedures weren't taken. That's very dangerous when you're a small country like Israel, surrounded by so many enemies. It doesn't take more than one successful shot at us, unfortunately. And this is what happened on October 7th. That's very, very devastating. It took also time until the system regrouped and got itself together. After that, I think the performance on the ground is good. Of course, it's too late for the people who lost their lives and the people who are kept hostage in Gaza, and less of them are alive. But from a security standpoint, what's actually happening in Gaza is quite effective. The IDF is capable of progressing and removing the capacity of Hamas from it. It's at a great toll, because Hamas is shooting at us and fighting at us from behind human shields, their own Gazan human shields, which unfortunately they care so little about. And there are many of them who get hurt during this time. There is an humanitarian disaster in Gaza, because many people are displaced, while the IDF is maneuvering in a very dense urban area. So this is a very bad war, and I'm sure the audience are viewing this through the media, not necessarily liking the pictures. It's a very bad situation for it. Israel has to defend itself against those terrorists who have sworn to kill us all if they could. And it did indeed start with a failure. This shouldn't have happened. Israel should have to be better than that, and I'm sure that we will be in future times.
Well, you know, I like to compare it to when America was struck at Pearl Harbor. And in Pearl Harbor, we were attacked, and about over 2,000 soldiers were killed. And it put America into World War II. And when World War II came, America did what it had to do to make sure that Japan was destroyed. And I think Israel is trying to do the same thing. We cannot be destroyed. And so I think having learned from history, I think that's what museums do. And I'm very proud to have with us this wonderful Igal Zinstein, who sounds like he's devoted most of his life at the museum. I don't know if you were there at the founding. The museum began in 1985, the year I started my newspapers in my living room. And so that year is a special year for me. But you have created this wonderful intelligence, heritage, and commemoration center for the intelligence community to be remembered of what they do. And if I'm correct, you're like the CIA and the FBI of our world.
Yes. So the Israel Intelligence Heritage and Commemoration Center, it was established in 1985 by the heads of the Israeli intelligence in Israel. And it's very unique because it's combined the three major intelligence agencies in Israel: the Mossad, which is like the CIA, the Shin Bet, which is like the FBI, and the Israel and the intelligence defense forces of the IDF, which is like the NSA. And all came together and they decided to establish a commemoration center. And this commemoration center became bigger and bigger and became with many more activities. And one of them is the establishment of the Israel Intelligence Museum, that we want to tell the story how the Mossad was established, how they brought the Jews from Russia, Ethiopia, Morocco, Yemen. Fascinating stories. We also want to educate the youth and visitors from the United States about the heritage, the legacy, the very, very interesting and fascinating legacy of the Israeli intelligence community. That in my personal beliefs, this is part of the Jewish history. You know, all the missions, how they caught Eichmann, Munich, and many, many other missions that they did, that without them, Israel will not be in the situation that we are here now. So this is the importance of the Israel Intelligence Museum. In addition, we have in other activities. For example, we have two research centers. One research center, it's the Meir Amit Research Center for fighting anti-Semitism and the BDS by providing reliable, actual information about the situation in the Middle East. So we, for example, any question people have and wants to know what happened today in Gaza, we have the most reliable information that we can provide them. And we have another research center for the methodology of intelligence, that doing research in issues related to cybersecurity, artificial intelligence. For example, we did a research how the Mossad, the Shin Bet, and the Israeli intelligence unit can work together better, to cooperate together. And the head of the research center, it's Brigadier General Yossi Cooperwasser. So we have many, many aspects of the organization. And recently we established in the United States the American Friends of the Israel Intelligence Heritage and Commemoration Center. To the goal of the organization is to bring awareness about our activities in Israel and to raise funds to implement our activities. And I'm happy everyone who wants to know more and have questions and want to be involved, I'm happy to provide my information and to contact me at any time.
So if we were to say which email or website, how can they contact you?
So I can give my cell phone number. It's 310-502-1719. I repeat, 310-502-1719. And my email, it's I as in ice cream, Z as in zebra, M as in Mary, L as in lemon, M as in Mary, so IZMLM at intelligence.org.il.
Well, we'll put it up for everyone to have. But I think, you know, the purpose of your coming, I was delighted to meet you in the Hamptons and at the Hampton Synagogue and then Dan's Papers celebration. I was so happy you were able to come over and meet with me to learn a little more about how this 501c3 organization is looking for Americans to support it and to be able to build it. And there's a permanent exhibition, I know, you mentioned to me. Would you share that with us?
Yes. So we want to build the museum. We have already the land for the museum, and now we want to establish the structure of the organization. And we're looking for partners and founders of the museum to, we have opportunity names to be founder of the museum and to be part of the establishment of the museum. And also here in the United States, we want to do seminars about the Israeli intelligence. So people will be more aware about the Israeli intelligence community. And I think we'll be proud that we have such an amazing, dedicated intelligence community that, for example, the Mossad protect us not only in Israel, it protect the Jews all over the world. And we want the Jews here to know more about that.
Well, I'm going. That's a segue right into Dr. Haluta. Your work at the being a fellow at Defense of Democracy Center. Talk me a little bit about that, because there is such a threat to our democracy right now in America from sources that shock many people. Tell us a little about the work you're doing now.
Yeah. So the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, the FDD, is a think tank in Washington. It was built more than 20 years ago. And the idea, it's a national security organization. The idea was to support ally democracies to the United States. I'm cognizant on the internal risk that people feel here in the U.S. And of course, as an American organization, they're of course involved in this, but their conceptual thinking was that America has democratic allies all around the world, and they're in danger. Israel being one of them. Currently, they're also working very hard with Ukraine and Taiwan. And from an American policy standpoint, how to extend the outreach, understanding that if the allies of the U.S. are at risk, eventually this will cause things to come back home. The organization was founded after September 11, so I think this signifies exactly what I just said. Terror in the Middle East, come hurting you here in the heart of New York, not far from the hotel room that we're in at the moment. And that understanding was that there needs to be ongoing work in the think tank world in Washington for it. The organization, of course, has very close ties with Israel, and I've been in touch with the organizations for years, and I'm very happy to come and serve here. As a foreigner, being in the organization, of course, it creates an opportunity for me to learn a lot from what they're doing, and also to contribute to their thinking and to the analysis that they're doing. It also allows me to meet many interesting people and to promote things that I think are important, such as what I do now with Eagle and others. And being here yesterday and meeting the people in the Hamptons and the meetings that we're doing today gives me an opportunity to talk to the people about the things that really worry them. The situation in the Middle East is really worrisome. The implications of that to what's happening here in Washington and in the United States as a whole is, of course, very, very worrisome. We're experiencing a rise of anti-Semitism. I think we're experiencing a confrontation, internal confrontation about what is the core of the value base between the U.S. and with Israel and more broadly. And all of those things are very delicate. And I feel privileged that I have the opportunity to assist a little bit in developing this thinking and increasing the bond, which is really strong and important to continue to strengthen between the U.S. and Israel.
So between both of you being here and seeing such misinformation about the history of Palestine and the history of Israel, I felt so sad that we hear such ignorance And I wonder, being a teacher by profession and a news person now, how we can educate our young people about the facts of how Israel has been there for how many thousands of years, and how the Palestinian problem for their leadership has caused a great deal of harm to many of the Palestinians. So is there any effort of continuity in messaging and education right here in New York and in our states? And of course, I don't know if that's going on in Israel as well.
So I believe in our center, for I'll give you an example, we have we took a geography book from the school in Gaza and in the Palestinian Authority. And in the book of geography, they don't have the map of Israel. You know, so they don't teach them that Israel is exist. So for example, we have all authentic information to show, you know, the and to explain the situation in the Middle East. We can bring actual facts, actual items to show the problem and to explain to the people here the real situation in the Middle East. We have experts who serve in the Israeli intelligence that they are part of our research center that can provide all this information and to provide the facts. Like, for example, there was the Goldstone report few years ago when the judge Goldstone said that Israel killed 2,000 people. So we gave we did a research and we found that 1,000 people were already in the hospital before the war. And then 500 people, we showed the bio, the terror bio of each one of them. And unfortunately, another 500 people died. And then the judge understood the facts that it wasn't that Israel killed 2,000 people. It was only, unfortunately, 500 people, but he didn't know all this. He didn't have all this information. So we educate about the real situation in the Middle East and about the different groups that they have there and their narrative to try to understand better the situation in the Middle East. I give you another short example. I met the ambassador of Israel in Italy. And I told him I represent the organization. And he came to me and hugged me. And he told me, I want to thank you. And I asked him, why? So he told me, your organization translated to me the mission statement of the Hamas that is in the website. And in the mission statement of the Hamas, it's saying to destroy the state of Israel. And he read it in the Italian parliament, this paragraph. And then they understood, you know, who we are dealing with.
Well, I think, you know, these are facts that I invite you to send to me to be able to be published for all of our readers to hear the facts. I still believe in the facts of the facts, and I'm inviting you to share that with us. I am so thrilled to have had this opportunity to talk with you, Igal Zeidenstein, who is the president and founder of this new organization that's being created by a wonderful team of the American Friends of the Israel Intelligence Heritage and Commemoration Center, and my personal James Bond. I'm so happy to have met you, Dr. Eyal Haluta, who is a physicist, just like Einstein, and who's in the security business. So may you be well, and may you be strong, and may you carry on your messaging. Thank you for being with me.
Thank you so much, Vicky, and thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you for everything. Thank you.
This is Victoria Schneps signing off our A-lister program for today. Till next time. Bye now.